please dial star 611 for assistance.
We get signal, main screen turn on. You're listening to the radio program about hackerspaces. This here little radio program about hackerspaces.
Hello again, and there we are, 12 minutes past 2, a little bit later than we were scheduled, but yeah, we have to rearrange the studio after the DJ session, and here we are in a very beautiful panel with the Queer Geek Show, and I hope you are eager to hear, and I think we'll start with explaining what we are about to do, and GMC, I would like to start with you, because we two came up with the idea of doing a show like this.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it's just, I don't know how we came to it, but it's fun to be queer, and I mean, it's fun to be it, but it's also sometimes difficult. It's very short, the whole reason I think we did this show, right?
Yeah, I mean, we met on totally different grounds than our sexuality. It was totally for radio reasons we came in touch together, and then I don't even know when it was that the issue evolved that, oh my god, we both like guys. And it did not really change that much in our working terms, but it changed a lot in many other things of our friendship, I think.
Hmm.
And especially the way we look at certain things in the hacker scene, I think, are changed because of our sexuality. And so we had this perfect opportunity here with so much open slots and this channel. Then we just thought we have to do something with it. Okay, I made a joke I didn't even got. Okay. There will be more
that
of them.
It took a while to sink in.
I love those jokes. So let us start. in a totally raining situation outside, the world is ending. I hope this is no sign. And we will totally ignore this, and I hope the listeners can ignore it as well. And I would like to start with introducing my panel here. I have Fabienne opposite of me.
Hello.
Hi. And next to her is Willow.
Hello.
And then there is Jimmy.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
And then right to me is first Mitch Altman. And then at the end of the table is the lovely Martin Hasen, Maha.
Yeah, hello.
And I think, Mitch, as you are closest to me, we should start with you. And I still would like to evolve about this issue of why we are doing the show, because I've been asking myself this question, and I also asked you the question, do you think it's reasonable to do a show like this? And you gave the best explanation for me, which totally convinced me that it's necessary and a good thing to do.
Yeah, so am I my mic's on? Okay, I can't hear myself. So growing up queer in a homophobic society, you know, in a society where we're all intended by our parents to be straight like everybody else in quotes, makes a lot of difficulties and challenges in growing up. I don't know what it was like for everyone else here, but for myself, I was beaten up every day in school for not being able to pass as being like everybody else. Not just for being queer, but also for being an introverted geek. Being a geek nowadays, for little kids isn't so, bad as it was when I was growing up. And I'm 54 now. So, and in the United States, I think bullying is a bigger problem than in Europe. But for being different in all these different ways, but a huge part of that is growing up queer, knowing I'm different, from all the other boys and, from all the other people, not really understanding why and being unable to articulate it, but knowing that I'm different in some big way and, being bullied and beaten up for it all the time. I grew to believe I deserved all of this. And, you know, I was totally depressed for the first half of my life. I can't remember any situation or a prolonged period of time where I felt good about anything. And that has a huge effect on my life. That also in later life enables me to empathize with other people in amazing ways and support other people because I can, you know, I can understand where people are coming from, whether they're feeling good or bad, and try to help them as best I can. But even in situations that I put myself in today, it's still, I carry all of my past pain with me everywhere I go. And also, people who are totally straight really can't empathize with my past experience. And even people who want to be sensitive and nice often say or do things that unintentionally I'm very sensitive to as a result of all of my past experience. So I try to let people know without getting down on people when they say things that I think are insensitive. And I think more people, if they're aware, they might be better equipped to, you know, say and do things in a way that are less button pushing for those of us who have grown up in any kind of similar way, growing up queer in a homophobic society, carrying all this stuff with us. So, I make it a point, in all situations that I'm in to try to say something to indicate that I'm queer because, people need to know that people that they respect are queer so that they can feel better about themselves being queer and not be so afraid of letting other people know more about themselves.
I think that's the central core issue, that somehow you need to tell them, although there's nothing to say.
Well, there is something to say. There's a lot to say. In an ideal world, there'd be nothing to say. You know, like whether I have gray hair, brown hair, or blue hair, it just doesn't matter. That's just part of who I am and my expression. And other people could care less or they could care a lot. But in this case, we live in a world where people care a lot. And even people who don't want to get down on other people, we all have prejudices. We're you know, even growing up queer, I was brought up to be straight. And even though my parents never said anything particularly negative about gay people, it was very clear from their behavior, their actions, what they said and what they did, that I was supposed to be straight. And I'm not. So I knew something was wrong with me just because of that. And that's big. There's a lot to say about that. It's ideally, there's nothing to say, but we're not in an ideal world, so there's a lot to say.
Yeah. I want to open up the panel at any time. If any of you has something to say and want to jump in, then please feel free to do. And Willow is the first.
So, I feel like hacking is the deconstruction of any system that other people take as granted. Which means that being queer is inherently hacking. Because you're not gay, and you're not bisexual, and you're not whatever, you're just queer. You don't even fit into any category that other people are giving you. You're just declaring outright that you're not anything that anyone has ever said before. And so it's a hacking of sexuality in general. And that's why I love being a part of this community, is because it's a group of people who understand that deconstructing hardware or deconstructing software or deconstructing systems in general means that it's okay to say this about your sexuality as well. And it's one of the reasons that I feel so at home in this system, but it's also very odd because people bring their assumptions with them when they come to interact with this, is that, hey, I'm here, and to use the coin of the term, I'm queer, hey, I'm here and I'm queer, and it's okay, but also that doesn't mean that I will represent all of these things that you assume goes along with that term. So, and it's okay to also be queer or to be bi in that sense. They're just ways of of describing where you're at. And that's great. Like, if you can figure out how to describe where you are, that's wonderful. So
would you say that the queer geek scene, or the hacker scene in general, has a particular open way to queer sexuality?
They're better at being... They're better at being accepting of those things. It doesn't mean that they're better at embracing them. Just because they can understand what you're saying doesn't mean that they'll be okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I found that the hacker culture is extremely accepting of, as Willow said, like, anything that is different than the norm. This is the first community that I've not had any kind of, like, feeling of being estranged from it by being open with my sexuality. And, you know, back in college, growing up, I also grew up in a very, like, homophobic society, and, like, in the South United States. And, you know, I'm having feelings for guys, I'm very confused, I'm told that this is evil and wrong. Finally, when I went to college, I started experimenting with girls, and then I was like, okay, actually, I'm not gay, I'm bi, and this is something that's acceptable. And even there, even in college, at, like, the LGBT meetings, where I should have felt welcome, the president told me that bisexuality doesn't exist. She told me this, and I was like, but, I mean, no, I actually, I don't know. So... Even there, where I thought that I would find acceptance, I did not. But in the hacker community, like, I've never had to explain it or defend anything. And I think that just the inherent nature of, we're taking these things, we're deconstructing them, we're finding out how they work, and we're putting them back together, or maybe it's even, like, just we're understanding, we're learning what this means. In everything from computers to whatever, allows for that openness in sexuality. I've just not found another scene that's been, like, so completely open to it.
I mean, that's very optimistic about the hacker scene, what you just said, and I wonder if Maha can agree with that.
I'm not sure. It's well, I'm I think that there is this openness. And I think Willow has said that very well, that there's acceptance. That's that's quite natural, because in the hacker community you accept people as they are. You don't attach much attention to how people dress. So in that sense, it's open. But embracing queer sexuality, or embracing sexuality as a concept, is something that isn't always easy for hackers, because lots of hackers can be described as asexual, which would be an aspect of being queer too, but there seems to be quite a number of people in the hacker scene who have a problem with sexuality, and then they have a problem with queer sexuality. That's obvious. So it's not that easy. I remember when I came to the Berlin Club for the first time at the beginning of the millennium. I was openly gay, and there was no question about that, and I felt accepted. But I remember that there was no, well, I had the impression that I was the only one who is gay there, and that has changed. Because nowadays you can see people kissing, men kissing each other in the kitchen of the Chaos Computer Club in Berlin. And, you wouldn't have seen that 10 years ago.
I think the first thing is to be accepted as you are in the community, but the other thing is to be no longer alone. also in the particular subgroup you are. And I wonder, and maybe there is a big difference between the States and Europe in this case, that maybe in the States you have more queer geek culture than we have in Europe. I mean, partly also speaking as an Austrian context.
With this assumption that we are, like, it's a social construction, and it's not necessarily, it's just a way that people are. And so thinking that it's a group that people belong to is the difference between thinking that it's a flag that people wave to indicate where they are versus a box that they fit into. And it's not necessarily, it's just a way that people are, and it's far more about what people are into and what they relate to other people about than it is about what they say they are. And so you can't... I just noticed you have a troll. troll face pasted up on your wall. But, like, you have to understand that so much of this has to do with what people are interested in, and if that has to do with what they're sexual about, then that's great, but that has just as much to do about the software system that they invest in. Like, if they're about Arduino, or if they're about Mac, or if they're about whatever, it doesn't matter. It's just one more thing about them.
Yeah, and I'd like to jump in about the US versus Europe, since I've lived in Europe since 2003 now. I've lived in Europe since 2003 now, and I'd like to jump in and say, you know, differences between US and Europe. I don't like to do the whole, you know, cliche stuff. I sound very American, but I speak German and French now, but I don't think there's a big difference. I don't think there really is, like, more acceptance in the US or less acceptance in Europe. It happens to be the particular day that you're on and the particular situation that you're in. And you can find situations in what you think are very open states that are very uncomfortable for gay people and queer people and those of us who find ourselves in a, you know, a different checkbox, then it happens everywhere. And I have good friends that are having, you know, trouble and strife in Scandinavian nations where we think that things are so open and so accepted. And I don't think that things are necessarily more open in any place particularly than any other. And it's the day and the place that you're in that dictates the situation that you're in. And if you're feeling uncomfortable, then you're feeling uncomfortable. And if there's someone who's being not open to the life that you live, then that's just the day that you're in. And it really doesn't have anything to do with the culture or the particular country that you're in. I kind of disagree with that, unfortunately.
I think there are big differences between American culture and European culture in general. Every country in Europe has a different culture, like various states in the United States have different cultures. And there are some places which are much more conducive for me feeling comfortable and for any individual to feel comfortable. We want to go to places where the culture is one we can relate to. You know, and Europe has a much longer history of being accepting of queer people. Which is why, like James Baldwin moved, to Europe away from the United States and so many other people, you know, decades ago. San Francisco is a place in the United States and New York, where queer people have felt much more, comfortable relating to the cultures there. My experience in queer scenes, as I travel around, and I travel around quite extensively. For people who don't know who I am, I've traveled around a lot for the last 4 years, visiting hackerspaces, doing workshops, often with Jimmy, and, you know, teaching people how to solder and make, cool things with electronics is the main thing. And, you know, I'm not closeted at all as I do this, but there are many places where I feel much less comfortable, discussing things about sexuality. And every time, no matter what, no matter how many times I've been through this, it's basically coming out again. And coming out is always at least somewhat of an ordeal. And in the United States, there's been much more times where I felt judged by other people than in Europe. So in all the European scenes I've been in, there might be people who are like, oh yeah, this queer stuff. But they're just more blunt about it and not hostile.
Like to jump in for a second, that I had some rather hostile situations in New York City. So, and we think of New York City as a very open city for those who are gay or openly bi or openly lesbian or openly queer. And I mean, this is recently, this is 5 years ago, and I had a lesbian tell me that my, you know, being bi was not a valid choice. So, having that kind of hostility at, you know, a gay pride parade is a rather, you know, disgusting thing. And I think all of us on this panel would, you know, laugh and think that was really silly. But I you know, it happens everywhere. And I just want to say, any of those who are out there who are listening, who've, you know, felt, you know, negativity, even in a place where you expect to be welcome, it happens, you know, and it doesn't make, you know, it doesn't make it okay. But I would love it if we would all, you know, be accepted for whatever the hell we feel like on, you know, a particular day. And, yeah, that's all I have to say on
that. That's why sexuality is so interesting to me. I mean, I'm one of the few people probably here who actually valued their education in some way, and it's because I went to the Kinsey Institute in Bloomington, Indiana, right? It's the largest porn collection in anywhere. Like, there's so much porn there, it's fantastic, but the idea that it's the most intrinsic of value, there are species that actually procreate before they do anything else. They don't even eat before they reproduce. Like, sex is the most basic thing to us as a living organism, and yet it's also the most socially constructed thing that we interact with ever, period. Makes it this really interesting thing to study, which also makes it a really interesting thing to have to live with. And as long as people understand that it's something that you have to interact with and not just something that you are, is to me fascinating, but that's because I'm a scientist. Like, I care about looking at these things from an objective perspective, but That's my feedback as a nerd. Anyway,
I wonder if we could make this hacker scene anyhow more comfortable for queer people, because so far people feel at home there over the time, but still, for me, the basic cause of the feeling of separation is that there is a heteronormative society. And to make this obvious, I often point out that there are no gay love stories which you hear as a child. It's always the prince and the princess. It's never two princesses. It's never two princes. Somehow you don't have this in mind when you grow up, and therefore you have to reconstruct things to come.
So something as basic as you have two stickers on your laptop, which are, we make porn and we like porn. What do you mean by that?
By that I mean that pornography, as the, it's hard to say in English. How will I put it? It's a kind of ideal. It's also a crucial ideal, but somehow it is for me, I show how it really is, even if it hurts. And it's, for me, similar to the way I like to do journalism, to really put the spotlight on the one thing maybe no one else is talking about, but this is the story I want to tell. That's my personal reason for these stickers.
Do you understand porn is not that for everyone else?
Of course, but
okay.
Nearly every word is subjective, you know?
Well, yeah, but I'm sorry. I'll not co-opt the conversation, but it's you're making people outside of that social construct of understanding that, like, I love porn. It's fantastic, right? But the people outside of that understanding are going to be put off by your on-putting.
This is part of being a hacker. And just the word hacker puts people off, but it also makes people think. and we can make use of this in a very powerful way. The words we choose, it's how we express ourselves. So we can be provocative, and we can, wow, nice noise. We can be provocative in ways that, don't get people very defensive. We can do it in ways that get people defensive and bring it in if we're skilled enough at doing such things. But it can be very powerful to reappropriate these terms for positive ends. You know, just the word queer in and of itself makes some people incredibly uncomfortable, even queer people, because this is the word that they were put down with in a very negative, horrible, powerful way when they were growing up, like myself. But for me, reappropriating that term allows me to feel much better about myself. And, you know, porn, I don't relate to as a word so much myself, but I can very easily see that using that word can mean very different things. So it makes people go, whoa, what is this person talking about? And for, there's, stickers being passed around all day and all night yesterday of, data porn, and, data love. And, the juxtaposition of love and porn that way is pretty interesting to me, and it can mean so many different things. And just putting a sticker on that just says data porn next to a sticker that says data love can be really interesting, what kind of things it can bring up for people. So, you know, I love hacking anything. We can hack anything. We can, as you were pointing out, we can hack ourselves. We can hack the planet. We can hack technology. We can hack society.
The Gibson. Can we hack the Gibson? Never mind.
I missed the reference.
Never mind. It's okay.
I also don't know what the Gibson is, but that's what I like about stickers on hacker conferences, because usually they do not offer only one interpretation. You can always read things into them. And of course, you will piss people off. The whole hacker culture is not meant to be something to stroke and easygoing. You can tell your parents that you're going to a hacker conference. Maybe not. I mean, we have to freak people out sometimes to do the first step of education. I think sometimes this is necessary.
Yeah, well, the hacking culture is a culture that wants to change society, I think. And, well, that's why it fits with being queer, because that is another way of changing things. And, yeah, being provocative is a good starting point in order to hack society and to change society. And, yeah, that's why such stickers are so useful and are so, well, appreciated in the hacker scene, because that makes you think. And just putting stickers on a laptop is already the first step into, into changing things.
And about being provocative and all that, I wonder what people think of the gay prides. I know, for example, in Amsterdam is the yearly gay pride, of course. I've never been there, actually. But there are people, including gay friends of mine, who say, well, that's a bit too much, you know. And although it has been pretty provocative at some years, so I mean,
yeah, but they
it
have
can
special,
be too much, maybe.
They have special problems there. I went there.
I sort of love it all, but
they have a rule that nobody must be nude, and when it is hot, people tend to throw off their clothes and jump into the canal, and that's forbidden. And at that point, the police arrives and there's a riot. So that's the problem. And I never understood that. In Germany, there may be that rule, but if it is hot on a gay pride day, there are people who are naked and nobody cares. But in Amsterdam, well, that's the point where
they went a bit further than just being naked. That's
this is the thing. Like in so many circles, people have been concerned in social and political scenes about what others will think, and then they start fighting over what others will think amongst themselves, and then tear their group apart. And in queer political situations and social situations, groupings, there's been so many times when you know, back in the homophile movement in the 1950s and 1960s, there was so much concern by the people within it over what mainstream society will think of them. And they did everything they did based on what they thought would give them the most acceptance to this mythical mainstream society. And they were totally ineffective as a result of that.
That's why I think that hacker culture is so primed to be a part of this movement, is because it's not about what you're in juxtaposition to. It's about what you actually believe in. It's not about what you're not. It's about what you are.
Exactly. And, exactly. Yeah. My point. So in my whole thing when I go around and do workshops is always trying to encourage people and even trick people if necessary into exploring and doing what they love. Yeah. By making it fun to do so. And I can do that by being provocative. I can do it by being kind of ridiculous, by playing a clown, by playing the fool, and just by being enthusiastic, which is very contagious, and doing what I love, which makes my life incredibly worthwhile living for me. And people can pick up on that, and then they want more of that for themselves in their own way.
And that exists outside of anything else, because you're living it for what you live it for. It's not about something that you're living against, which means that if you win in hyperactive bunny ears sense of like parentheses and whatever else, if you live it outside of some other context, it will never catch on because it's not its own thing. Whereas if you live it because it's what you are, which is what I think everyone here does, then it exists beyond that.
Yeah, because we don't exist in, you know, as a teenager, of course, I was rebelling against my parents. So all these things I was doing was, I was in my own teenage mind, whatever, doing things my own way. But I was really doing things against what my parents wanted rather than doing things that I wanted. At this point in my life and for quite a while now, it's, as you say, I'm doing it because I love it and not defining myself about what others think. Of course, I'm still affected by what others think, because that's my background has been so much of being put down by what others think and affecting me in incredible negative ways. And I can't get rid of that no matter what positive experience I've had and how many decades since then. But still, that's not how I define myself anymore, and that's not what motivates me to choose what I choose in my life anymore. And so likewise, the personal reflecting into the social, which is political, if I'm part of a group, I want that group to define itself on its own terms and not in juxtaposition to what I tend to call the dominant paradigm. And the dominant paradigm is basically just society at large. So, which tends to be quite a dominating society, especially in the United States, where I'm from. What's better is what dominates better. And that's not how I live my life, and that's not how a group will define itself and behave that I want to be a part of. Any group I want to be a part of is going to define itself on its own terms and not fight against the dominant paradigm, because if you fight the dominant paradigm, it will squish you. The dominant paradigm is really, really amazingly good at dominating. It's been doing it for thousands of years, and I've only been doing it for 54. And I've been trying not to dominate. You know, my intent is to live my life that I love and not to dominate and not to try to out-dominate the dominant paradigm. Whenever I've tried to do that, I just feel awful because I'm fighting something way, way bigger than myself and I'm going to lose. But we don't need to fight the dominant paradigm in order to change society in an incredibly powerful, positive way. There's all these niches within the dominant paradigm that are ignored, and we can take root in those niches. We can make the niches. We can grow those niches. Hackerspaces, as I see it, hacker conferences, maker fairs, all these things are within the dominant paradigm, but separate from it. We're not fighting the dominant paradigm. We can even draw from what we like from the dominant paradigm. In so doing, we can encourage one another, support one another in all doing what we love. And by doing so, we create more opportunities for more people to live fulfilling lives. And as that happens, society changes in incredible ways.
But aren't you fighting the dominant paradigm when you don't accept it? When you build your thing in your niche, I think that's a way of perhaps not fighting.
Not fighting. That's
not
the
fighting,
main point.
But I think the dominant paradigm is affected by that.
The dominant paradigm might be affected, but the thing is, if the dominant paradigm might be affected in a positive way, because I see no reason why it can't be a win-win-win situation for all involved.
If we're able to, that's why it's important to understand what we stand for rather than what we stand against, is that if we stand for being okay with whatever comes along, that means that if we win, win being a very loaded term in whatever it means, but it means that whatever we stand for is okay, as opposed to it's just a subculture against whatever is the norm, with a capital N, norm.
And I think in hacker terms, doing and building rather than breaking. And we're doing, we're acting, we're creating, we're actively living what we want to see. And if we do that by example, then other people will be more relaxed to do that around us. And I know that's a rather simplistic thing, a way of putting it, but I think that's just what happens.
Yeah, and we can do this in a way that isn't threatening as well. So if the dominant paradigm, it's almost as if it's a conscious entity. Of course, it's just a collection of conscious beings, each individual. But put together, the society runs in a big picture the way it runs, and it's a fascinating topic all in itself, but it's almost can be seen as a conscious entity that has defensive mechanisms to protect itself. And any culture that endures through time has many ways of getting rid of things that are a threat. And our dominant paradigm in our modern world is really, really good at taking care of threats. One of the main ways of doing it isn't just squishing what is a threat, but by co-opting it. Mm. And that is a very, very powerful way of getting rid of any kind of a threat. But if we can proceed in our niches, in hackerspaces, maker fairs, whatever, you know, this is just one realm that we find ourselves a part of, we can proceed in ways that can provide opportunities for those around us to take a part of, to explore how they themselves might lead more fulfilling lives, then that's not a threat to the surrounding culture.
I think that's totally correct. What you're saying, in our modern society, you have the freedom to choose which group, which subculture, which collection of groups and identity parts you want to accept or not. And it's a much better strategy to just ignore those normative factors in our society than try to fight and change them. And you're speaking on a very high macro level, and I would like to come down more on this micro level. And on this layer, I have to point out that, at least from my personal experience, people like you and people like Ma and people like GMC make a big difference, because they show you that you are not only not alone, it's also like, okay, this is how life should look like. Yeah. It's a kind of boilerplate of, okay, all these fears I might have about my insecure future and not getting a clear pathway in my life from the society I'm grown up from. I have these role models now, and also not only one, I can choose, but I can see, okay, those people can live totally normal lives, they can be happy, they can even influence many, many people. And this is the kind of, I don't know, the history of side stories. It's like all the gay people we had over the whole history. I mean, usually those stories are never told, or never in the conservative circles, especially in my country, in Austria. The gay warlords we had, the gay monarchs we had, no one talks about, and you won't hear it in school. But if you're interested, you can find out. And this totally changes your identity, partly identity, but also your sexual feeling of how you are in the world, because it gives you something very powerful, tradition. And I think the Wikipedia used to have this, or it's even older, this on the shoulders of giants. Partly it's the same thing.
On the shoulders of giants, but in the end, it turns out that the giants are dwarves too. There are just many of them, so.
Yeah. that's the kind of thing I meant, and, I think it's time for a short music break, and then we'll be back. And this was Viva La Vida from Coldplay, from the Life album Left, Right, Left, Right, Left. And we're back. Fabienne sadly isn't here at the table right now, but we have a new guest, Tomate, who's joining us.
Hello.
Hi. And I've been asking myself where should we go next, and it was pointed out to me that something I said in the break probably is the best bridging statement, and it's basically that I wouldn't like to be anything else, even if I would meet a magic ghost who could make me whatever heterosexual happy person with children and stuff.
That'd be so boring.
Yes, mostly it would be boring. I mean, there are issues, you know. One of the things which I'm starting to thinking about with 24 now is that I probably never will have children, you know. At least not in this society. I can't imagine that.
You just grow them in a shoebox in the fridge. It'll be fine.
If I could build them, if Mitch could help me to build my children in the hardware hacking
area. Yeah, we're actually releasing a kit. we're running a workshop tomorrow on it, you know.
Do we need biohackers for that? It's not so unrealistic anymore, actually. I don't know, is this whole children thing an issue, or is this also, I mean, many people don't have children and they grow old without bothering about it.
I personally knew I didn't want children when I was 5 years old. I told my parents when I was five I didn't want children, and they never believed me. In fact, when I came out to my mom, the first thing she said through her crying tears was, "Oh, I always wanted little Mitchies." And I was like, "Mom, I told you when I was five that I didn't want children, and I knew I didn't want children." She said, "I know, I never believed you." Don't understand why anyone wants them, because, I love teaching them how to solder, but then I go home. But whatever, you know, we all make our own choices. If people want to have children, that's their choice. I just know for me, that's not what makes me happy. I have a lot more energy to do all the things I really love when I'm not looking after these other beings. I can handle a feline, but that's about it for me. And I wouldn't even say being heterosexual and whatever is boring. I mean, that's not who I am. That's not who I want to be. But people all have to make their own choice, and based on who they perceive themselves to be. And I don't want to change who I am with a magic fairy wand. I want to be who I am to the best of my ability continually. It's a moving target, but this is my goal, is to be the best who I am, who I can be continually until I'm dead.
I think that that's something that our subculture fails at, is I personally cannot stand the thought of something gestating inside of my body. Like, I cannot handle that idea. And yet, if we're going to take any sort of responsibility culturally, we also have to deal with how we interact with children in any sense. And while I'm not okay with being a part of that personally, like, I will have an exchange with any child that I can, because I believe in infecting their brain meats, basically. So, They don't, well, yeah. I mean, they don't need to have my genes. They just need to have my ideas.
Well, not even have your ideas, but they, you know, if people have kids, we have to give them the opportunity to live fulfilling lives. You know, if they don't have fulfilling lives, then the world is just going to become more of a place where people are scrambling for stupid things like money and not fulfillment and happiness, which makes the world a worse place. And it's not my ideas that I want children to have, but it's the idea that they can be who they are, no matter who they are, and live their lives the best to their ability while they're alive.
Well, I mean, hacker culture in general, I've seen is quite kid-friendly in a way. If you look around at camp, like, there's dozens of kids, like, running around with their parents or, like, just running around on their own. And, you know, in the hardware tent alone, I've spent, like, I don't know, 9 out of 10 hours in the hardware tent so far, but, you know, we've got like a handful of kids that keep coming in there, and like their parents are very encouraging, and that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I've had parents at workshops being like, you know, whatever the kid wants, just let them solder the kits and I'll pay for it at the end. You know, and it just, that's a beautiful thing for me. And,
that's a handful in juxtaposition of how many hundreds of people have gone through the tent. Like,
oh, I know. But at the same time, like, how many kids do you see running around at Burning Man? So it's.
I think children always symbolize hope.
Yeah.
No matter how few there are.
Yes, because it's like they symbolize terror.
They definitely symbolize hope. And here at camp, we have, since last year, a disproportionately large amount of 4-year-olds. And if you know that camp happened 4 years ago, you can imagine what happened. What happened in tents 4 years ago. So it's really, no, but it's, in all seriousness, it's very exciting. And I think it's very hopeful direction for all of us, because the parents who are raising these children are very open and open to their children being anything that those children want to be. And
yeah, much more so than certainly the way I was brought up, by far.
And I had very hippie parents, so very open parents, and they were shocked that I wasn't openly lesbian and that I decided I was bi. So, that, I mean, we have, you know, all different options of who we're born into. And I think the families that we choose are those who are embracing to us.
It's who we're born out of, not born into.
That's true.
That's true.
Thank you, Willow. Thank you. But I think that the children that are here at camp, who are much more prevalent, and I would say 4 times as many as 4 years ago, but I don't have exact numbers. And those children who are running around at camp today are much more open at being whoever they want to be. And I see little girls dressed in pink. So not little girls who are dressed to be tomboys or dressed to be anything. And the one little girl that I saw dressed in pink said, I want to fly that helicopter in German yesterday. So that makes me happy. And I think, you know, we don't have to dress along gender lines. We don't have to raise our children along gender lines. And I think that's a very important delineation for the next generation.
I think Tim Bittlefond said, who is a father of 2 children, relaxed children you get with relaxed parents. That's very simple, but I think it's true. And yeah, I mean, there are so many things you can do wrong with children. And I think the positive influence, if you have at least a handful of people who give you the right input when you're young, many things can grow out of that. And I wonder which ticks and tunes we could do in the hacker scene to get a little bit more of this effect, because I don't think that this camp experience here can be generalized. I don't think that it is that optimistic if you look at the whole hacker scene.
I am so happy to get into how to raise anything, whether it's a child or someone who's already entered into adulthood without this sort of experience, but I don't think it has anything to do with queerdom, which is what this podcast is supposed to sort of be about. Like, I'm happy to get into that, but I don't think that they are intrinsically tied to one another. Like, I think that that is something that mother culture, capital M, capital C, imposes upon us. And we don't have to think that, like, because I'm queer has nothing to do with the fact that children terrify me. Like, it has nothing to do with that. But, like, that I, you have enough podcasts to get into what it is to raise children in a healthy fashion. That doesn't have to be about what we do right now. If we want to get into what it is to be queer in this culture, I would love to hear more from Jimmy and from this lovely gentleman with the washed out blue mohawk that, over here. And I
totally agree with, like, you. I would never do a podcast about children raising. It's probably the only one where I would raise this question.
No, I wanna know more about that, but maybe in a week.
Okay.
But right now I want to hear about what people's experience is in being an outcast in a society of outcasts.
Oh yeah, and like, I think I totally want to know what Tomato has to say.
Okay,
it's not running away right now.
Is this open? Yeah, great. When I joined this hacker scene, or however you will call it, I lived in a relationship with a boy, and there was a party at a hackerspace, and I went to it with my boyfriend, and it was hard. It was really, really hard, because people knew me for half a year, and they did not care of my sexuality, of course not, because there was no reason for that. And it was a party, though. Bring your partner. I brought my partner. Bad idea. And at this party, I thought, well, all these open persons, now they have problems. What's going wrong? And it took over a year for them to accept that, sorry, that I don't care for the gender of my partner. It really took over a year. And when I look now for the people who are now 16, 17, 18, 19 and are open queer and, well, love whatever they want, that's not a problem at all for them. So I'm really glad for them that they can live their sexuality as they like, and do not have to do the fights some others of us had to do in the last years.
I don't know, actually, if young people these days don't have the problems we just had described, and well, I think many of us had, because, well, at least in the Netherlands, in schools, it's quite an issue, actually, where you get the message that being gay, the word for gay is basically a bad, if you think someone is an asshole, you say he's gay. So that really, and that's something that did me in personally as well, but that's still going on. So
At least I meant in the hacker scene, not in in the rest of the life.
Okay.
The rest is hard enough.
in German, that's changed even to the worse. Because schwul, well, used to be a bad word, but
now it's a fashion attribute.
Well, it's a fashion attribute, and it isn't bad. But nowadays, in schools, on schoolyards, you hear schwul, not even, on schoolyards, you hear schwul in a negative sense, once again. And even in the hacker scene, I've heard, people talking about some, gay transistors, meaning that they are broken or something. Yeah. And that's a tendency which, well.
I happen to witness language use like that, and it's usually unconscious, I find out, because I tend to say something or, well, go into it, but I don't always feel like it. So I wonder if other people, yeah.
It's funny though, because in Austria it is very, very common to use schwul as a word for that's not male enough, that's not functioning right, or also partly that's only funny. And also in MetaLab, in the Viennese hackerspace, you hear this quite often. And I don't know, the way I learned to deal with it, because I'm out nearly since I'm since I'm 14 for the people who know me, and since I'm 16, I'm kind of open politically out in a, I was an out student speaker, and I just look at the people when they make these types of jokes, and usually they realize I do not even say something because I wouldn't know what to say. But if they just witness that they mean me with that, it's like they would call my name. And this gives them a personal connection to the word they just used. Mm. And often enough, they will excuse. They will often also go on with their habit. It cannot really change the bad attitude. But at least for the situation, I found for me a way of dealing with it, and hopefully also over time, changing this behavior.
So this is such a good way of getting into what do we aim to do by being the people that we are. Like, do we try to construct better societies out of doing the things that you actually care about? Which means that you actually embrace the people around you who are also being the people that they care to be. They're also being just who they are. And so it's so hard to try to be around people who disregard the rest of society and the things that are malicious in that context, and saying, like, you have a right to privacy if you guard your privacy. You have a right to support artists if they're actually making the music. Like, all of these we are so good as geeks at dealing with juxtapositions of ideas. And yet trying to say being queer is okay with also being a person, we suck at that game. And it's not okay. Like, in our break, I was able to go around and, like, every single person here, I was able to say, I really care about you for being able to be here and say what you're saying. Like, it's a really big, big deal to be able to say this even amongst people that you're used to being out to as far as being a fucking weirdo, right? Like, I don't know if it's okay to curse on this radio or not, but, like, to be fucking weird, and yet to be weird in this sense, like, why is that not okay? And so you're just some other iteration of what it is to be human and what it is to be an ape in clothes.
So I'm kind of curious what everyone else's, like, experience with, acceptance in kind of the hacker culture versus, like, as we were speaking earlier, like, the heteronormative culture, because, like, what I found in general, what I was saying earlier was that I've felt more comfortable in this culture, and I've had fewer conversations. That doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It still does exist, obviously, but I felt more comfortable being open about my sexuality and, even things like being vegetarian. Like, it sounds weird, but, like, you know, when I'm in Germany and, like, everyone else is vegetarian, like, I don't get, there's, like, a little bit of tongue in cheek about it, but, like, it's not, like, really, 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 like, oh, we gotta deal with this guy. It's not the same. It's not the same level. And same thing when, you know, it's just like, no, I go either way, and it's just like, oh, okay. It's not a, whatever. It's none of that. Not at the same level is what I'm trying to say, but I'm curious of, like, what other people have found, a difference between, this culture and, like, the kind of normative culture in,
when I started, being in the hacker scene, it was for me harder to be open to the people. Because, in my old peer group before that, people really accepted it. No discussion. They had really no problem with it. There was no using the word gay in a bad way or something like this. And I only found that again in the in the geek culture. And that was really, whoa, these open-minded people do really have problems with that. And I nearly left the geek culture again because I didn't want to stand this. But Well, my boyfriend said, no, it's fun for you, stay there. And so, well, now I'm here.
I think partly it reminds me of this thing I had in the a word which was on the PowerPoint presentation of Jens Olig today in his talk. Hacker machismo. What did he call it? Hacker machismo. Basically. Because I think especially as a younger boy in the hacker scene, you have to work your way up a hierarchy. And generally speaking, if you were gay, this is a sign of weakness in this fight. And it is not, it makes a difference. I think at least if you go outside of Berlin, where the people are generally very open and you have a strong left culture, it makes a difference. I don't know. Maha, what do you think?
There are different places. And it's possible, but it's certainly different in the countryside. And, well, I don't know where Tomate had his experience. And, but still, I think that the hacker culture is, well, I would say an anti-normative culture. So, being against the dominant culture or dominant paradigm, well, is a part of being a hacker. And that's why there are so many people who do their things, who are vegetarians and gay and queer and so on. So that goes together. And if you look at the people here, well, you see people from everywhere. There are not only people from Berlin, or so. And I think in general, the hacker scene or the hacker culture is open. Of course, since there's always some pressure from the dominant society, and since we do not live outside of these pressures, you will see them even within the hacker within hacker groups. But still, I think that being against the norm is part of being a hacker.
Yeah, or just being free to be ourselves and wanting to be ourselves, and that's way not normal. Because the thing is, what the hell is normal anyways? We can list this list. We can each list these qualities that we can surmise are normal. Not a single person in 7 billion people on the planet have all of those qualities, which means that every single person on the planet is not normal. Every one of us is a complete weirdo.
Well, I'm sure one person has all of those qualities, but they're completely a weirdo.
Totally a weirdo because of that, because they're the only one. And, you know, so... We're all total weirdos, and the thing is, but people strive to fit into those pretty much arbitrary norms, and people who we all grew up with some amount of shame of who we are, insecurities, etc. We all had parents who had parents who had parents, and those are passed down through generations, and. So we try to cope somehow, and one of the ways that many people cope is by putting other people down to try to momentarily put themselves up. And they can get a little bit of juice out of that, especially if there are other people around going, so it's quite normal for whatever kind of political minority group to go, oh no, you know, we're not these damn freaks. Those people over there, they're the damn freaks. And but still, we all have some of that in us to varying degrees. Growing up queer in a homophobic society, I'm homophobic. You know, I don't go out and bash queers. That's a totally different level of being homophobic. But still, there's a lot of shame within me about being queer, about being who I am. And that will never go away. It becomes less important over time. But still, there can be just things that totally bother me and get to me are things that I somewhat believe even emotionally, even though I don't intellectually. So, you know, why would it matter if some asshole in a pickup truck drives by and calls me a fucking faggot? Why would that matter? I don't even know this person. I'm never going to see them again in my whole life.
But it hurts.
It hurts a lot.
Yeah, it hurts a lot. And it's not only the guy who's driving by and calling you a faggot. It's everyone who's looking bad at you while you kiss your partner in public or while you touch him or whatever, or while you walk hand in hand. And this is way worse than giving you names because you're queer. The looks of the people, which look like, oh, poor boy, he's not hetero, he will never have children, all the stuff we all have heard often enough, and we all get this with some silly looks.
Yeah, and I think the reason that it affects us so much is because on a deep level, to some extent, we believe them. And and it hurts.
Okay, so I grew up in a very small town in the Midwest, in the U.S., and yet everything that I have ever defined myself by is by what I am, not what I'm not. Like, I know that I'm not normal, but that doesn't matter because I would like, at some point, for what I am, whatever that is, to be normal.
Normal for you.
Well, no, I would like it to be okay for whatever people are to be all right. And I went to Catholic school. Like, I went through this. I went through the same shit. And yet, my ideal is not for, like, I never cared when people shouted faggot at me. Like, I'm glad you got out a two-syllable word. Like, I don't... It didn't matter so much to me. It mattered to me that they were even thinking that there might be another alternative. And so I know that we have not that much time left, but I don't understand where you got this idea that you're combating something. It's just, you're something else. And that's okay as long as it's okay where you're, I don't mean to bring up this thing over this table with microphones, but where did it become a situation that you had to actually battle other people over? How was it not just something that you...
I didn't hear anyone say they're battling other people.
Yeah, what experience do you mean?
No, when you're saying that other people are calling you a faggot, and
it
that...
hurts.
Why does it hurt?
Because on a deep level, and to some degree, I believe them.
And, why? And I, why would you believe them?
Well, intellectually, I don't believe that at all. But on an emotional level, growing up as a little kid, knowing that I was wrong because I'm not what my parents expected me to be, what all the other kids were beating me up for, how can a little kid think anything else but that they deserve it? That's what I believe. I believe that for the first half of my life. Intellectually, even though on some level intellectually I didn't want to, but I knew I was wrong and I needed to be fixed. I was a deep inner knowing, and I wish it were otherwise, but I can't wish it away.
I guess I'm the middle wave between where you were at, Mitch, and like I really feel where you were at.
But I really don't think that this is
we might be going.
The issue here is not about whether you actually feel hurt or not. Whether you care at all what other people say or not, it is, for me at least, a political issue. If you let it allow that people use this word to generally discriminate this group with their language, then you open up a gate which can lead to much worse. I mean, we have a linguist on the table, and maybe there is some scientific thing you can say about that, but I think it starts with the words. And I would be very careful if certain group gets stigmatized in a public discourse with language.
Yes, that's true. I think that words are not just words, but concepts. And if concepts and not even denotations, but connotations come up, they can have an impact. So so that's why one has to be careful with the words. But I think the problem here is that people
reproducing dominant culture, and it's very difficult to get rid of these ideas that that are there. So,
but I think one way of getting rid of them is to give some kinds of acceptance from the top down. It always matters what the head of an organization, a society, a state is saying. For example, in my country, we had a right-wing gay politician. Everyone knew, but no one talked about it. Mm. Only after his death. Speak about Haida. And in Spain, the first thing Zapatero did when he was in office is allowing gay marriage by just changing one word in the constitution, that marriage is a bond between man and woman. And he replaced it with two people, actually two words. And question is, come back to the subject, is there any kind of official statement, policy of the CCC when it comes to queers, gays, and maybe discrimination happening in some remote CCC Alpha Kreisen? Because I think there is.
Mm-hmm. There is? An official statement? I don't know.
No, like what we discuss here on the table. I don't know. I mean, CCC
The hacker ethics. The hacker ethics can be read as a, queer document if you want to.
I know.
Because
there
it's
is
about
a list
questioning
of
authority and doing your own thing and so on. So that is...
There is one paragraph, a hacker shouldn't be judged by blah, 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 blah. Sexual orientation is not in there and only based on his skills. That's... Mm-hmm.
So that means that your sexual orientation doesn't count. That hasn't anything to do with your skills.
Hopefully it's read by, like that. But, I mean, we're not speaking about the most intelligent people who start discriminating. It's usually, not so...
Oh, it's independent of intelligence. The level of homophobia might be different based on intelligence or not. I mean, there's some incredibly intelligent people who have been the worst homophobes ever to walk the planet. And many of them, in fact, probably all of them, are closet cases. And this is because we internalize, our self-hatred that, we perceive from society around us growing up as little kids. And we internalize this stuff. That's totally, normal for people to do so. Back to hacker culture, like at Noisebridge, it was started by two queers, me and Jake Applebaum. And, and Jake always says he's queer and, he's totally out with it, and we created one rule in our anarchistic hackerspace, and that's be excellent to one another. If someone is homophobic, if they're sexist, if they're racist, this is incredibly not excellent, and everyone within our culture agrees with this. It's a very subjective thing, but within the culture and the people it attracts with our culture, this is not acceptable. Occasionally, we hear something homophobic at Noisebridge, but it's not acceptable. On a playground in school when I was growing up, it was totally acceptable. The gym teacher would cross his arms and just watch as people beat me up. You know, and again, that proves to me that I deserved what, I was experiencing. Even though I intellectually know that's not right now, emotionally, you know, deep down, that never went away. But it's great being a part of a hackerspace, you know, albeit that I, co-created, where it's totally not okay for people to be put down for who they are. And, I would love to see more of that, in society at large, and certainly that at every hackerspace around the planet. And for the most part, I feel much more comfortable in hacker scenes than just about anywhere else. Earlier you said something kind of interesting to kind of, back to your other point away from this, but, you said like this machismo culture. I feel less of that in hacker scenes than certainly in American culture at large. American males are supposed to be macho. American males, including myself, are supposed to be independent. We're supposed to be right all the time. We're not supposed to apologize. We're supposed to be strong. and being queer is looked down upon as being weak. I do feel less of that in the hacker scene, even though there's some of this. But I don't have the sense with at least the new school, this new wave of hacker spaces that we're experiencing around the world, that you have to work your way up some kind of ladder.
I was more speaking about the security hacker scene.
It is like the zero-day subculture. That's a pretty macho culture, I think. And that's also why I personally noticed most of the careless use of words, which hurt me. And
as in, girls don't know assembler, or?
Stuff like that, yeah, or, yeah.
So even though, so this is something that I've dealt with in the space that I have founded and continue to facilitate in some manner as much as I travel, is that women are not only not socialized into being public speakers, they're actively socialized away from it. And so you end up with a lack of women in this subculture because it's not aware of the pre-existing history of women not being a part of things. And so people in this subculture just expect the women in it to understand that you need to step up and just say, hey, I know about this thing. You should probably let me lead this class. We don't get that. We don't get that those ladies don't know that they just need to step up.
Or we have ladies who are there who exist and publish under pseudonyms, which has happened for many, many years. And some of the top hackers that you probably, idolize are actually women. And you don't know. So we have, a lot of what we consider underground hackers and, pseudonyms and stuff, which are actually groups of people. And from those groups of people, many of them are women. The same way with graffiti artists, where we see graffiti artists published under, one name. That happens also in the hacker subculture. And those women maybe don't get up on stage and they don't publish the O days, they don't publish the zero days, but they're actually there, doing the low-level code and the reverse engineering. And
yeah, well, this is really a different scene than hacker spaces for the most part, because that's this elitist group of people who have to prove themselves and out-cool the other people. And that's really more of the old-school kind of hacker space and hacker scene.
Absolutely.
And not to like to put that scene down in any way for doing what they do if that's what they love. But what I would love to see continue, which has happened incredibly fast and powerfully over the last 4 years, is this hacker culture, which is totally inclusive to the best of everyone's ability, very diverse, boys, girls, trannies, whatever, anything goes, despite people's prejudices. But people acknowledge their prejudices and try to get beyond them consciously. Where it's not okay to say something sexist, where it's not, hell, I'm sexist, I'm homophobic, I'm racist, all these things, but to varying degree, and I try to be as conscious about it as I can, something might slip out which I'm not proud of, and I want people to call me on that stuff. And I want to call other people on their stuff, whether it's homophobic or whatever. Homophobia, strikes me more than other ones, because that's a big part of who I am. But all of them strike me powerfully. I don't want to be around while someone is talking about those damn niggers. I'm going to say something. I don't feel comfortable when you say that word. And if they try to put me down for that, I have a choice of engaging in a conversation about that or leaving. And those can both be very powerful.
And yet, in the same way, when I was in at Omnicore Detroit for Detroit Maker Faire, there was a group of these guys that mobbed their bicycles out with LED lights and speaker systems and all this other stuff, and they were all of the Black community. And I was the first person that walked over and was like, "That's pretty." Rad. Like, what did you do here? Like, what resonance is your light on that it highlights your spokes at that rate so that it makes this other thing happen? And they didn't know what a hackerspace was. like, as much as we think that we're tolerant, and like, I feel like I am totally supported in this community, and I know that everyone here is supportive of whatever comes along, but we don't do that outreach. We don't see that there are other people who just need you to go out and, like, Mitch, you're the exception. Like, you actually go out, and maybe other people here are.
There are a lot of people who do in the hacker world. I mean, I'd love to see much, much more of this. Because, you know, as I go around, I mean, especially, in Detroit, I mean, the person who started OCD, OmniCorp Detroit is Jeff Sturgis, and he's going out into, the community that surrounds him, which is full of, working class people, full of middle class people, white people, black people, and, he's doing incredible things to try to give people opportunities, to have positive experiences in their life, and it's amazing effect that it's having on people. Me and Jimmy did a workshop at the public library
and just opening up his garage just for like the neighborhood kids to like come in and like use the tools to make things, and like, you know, that it's significant. And
And I'd love to see more of this. So and because there's wow, we grew up in a world which has a lot of all of these isms, and it's never going to go away, but hopefully we can make it so that there are more opportunity for not only ourselves, but the people around us to have more opportunity to live fulfilling lives through what we do.
I only talk to people who already get it. It's so hard to talk to people who don't understand this culture yet. They don't understand the language, and it's not because of any life experience that they've lived through or haven't lived through. It's just, it's hard to talk to people who aren't already at camp, right? So,
I think it's a certain media literacy. You need to read this culture, but you can get that in a few months, I think. But there is a lot of fascination about it. Otherwise, the numbers wouldn't grow, and camp wouldn't grow.
Camp doubled since 4 years ago. I mean,
exactly, and I think that's a good sign. But to use the remaining 20 minutes we have, I would really like to come back to maybe something more in the security hacker scene we dismissed before. I still think this is part of the same hacker scene, and some people may disagree that there is a differentiation. I mean, I still see people with t-shirts, "I'm a hacker, I read your emails," not the guy with the solar ring I am. And, at least there, I think feminism is an issue.
They're here. In person, and not just, dissing people over IRC.
But you can discriminate people also over IRC.
Oh, absolutely. And there are trolls on IRC. There are trolls on, email lists, and it's much worse when it's not in person. But, you know, what we're seeing with the emergence of this new wave of hackerspaces over the last 4 years, started, you know, a bit before that with, the German and Austrian hackerspaces. But it's one where it's not socially acceptable for people to play this macho posturing.
Yes, but what I wanted to say was more that, you made a beautiful remark, Fabienne, about, woman not being seen as woman, publishing under a pseudonym, and,
I think it happens for a lot of queer people as well. We don't
exactly
necessarily say,
like,
I'm out, I'm gay, here's my handle. I mean, we operate under, you know, a different set of rules online, and whether that's online on a IRC or private IRC or publicly, you know, out on a website where, you know, we publish posts or whatever, or even if we use our face or a picture, it doesn't matter. If we don't, you know, in our bio, we don't say, "Hey, I'm Fabienne and I'm bi," you know, we don't necessarily, you know, put that out there. And I'm not saying that we should. I'm just saying that when we're at a camp and we're face to face and we have our partners with us, our families with us, and it's a different environment than if we're online. I mean, that's
exactly.
being queer in person, being queer online is a very different,
but like the general expectation when you meet somebody that they are also heterosexual, like the norm, I think in the internet, the general expectation is that you're talking to a man. often
a 14-year-old boy. We have a joke.
Yeah, maybe
I mean,
bias.
Publishing on Hacker Day for so many years with so much hatred and so much negativity towards what I was posting, and I wasn't even openly female there. We just had a joke. We said, well, all the negative and the hatred is coming from 14-year-old boys. And it was an easy way for us to dismiss the angst and the hatred and the negativity, but it doesn't have to be that way. We can say, you know, I'm a woman and I do hardware. I mean, it has nothing fucking to do with my gender or my sexuality. It's my, you know, it's what I love to do, so.
I met the experience last year, roundabout, and the activist group I work with, suddenly we had new people. That was great for us, and well, as we consider ourselves a great bunch of friends doing things together, we talked openly about ourselves, and one person, transgender, well, at least we did not really care, but it was nice for us to hear that she said she got encouraged to live what she is feeling by being activist and fighting for freedom and a free net. And she said it was the first time she ever felt free was when she joined our channel. And after this, she decided to live what she feels. And now, well, she's a physical she, and she's happy. And this was so great to see. But I'm not sure if this would work in other hacking groups. I don't know. I never experienced that before, and no one ever told me that he experienced something similar. But I hope that this will happen again and again and again, that people feel free and comfortable in the hacker scene or in the activist groups, that they can finally live what they feel.
Yeah, that's really what I totally love about this, and we can go way further. But in the hacker scene, we have a great opportunity to help make that go further. One of the things I'm really proud of is the usage of the word noise bridge on Urban Dictionary, which says the usage of the word noise bridge is something to the effect of, I went to noise bridge to make something out of MakerBot, but I went home with a tranny.
I made out with a tranny.
Yeah. So, you know, but the thing is, there's certainly been homophobia at NoiseBridge and stuff said about against transgender people at NoiseBridge, but it's not socially acceptable there. And there are many transsexual people that hang out at NoiseBridge, much higher percentage than society at large, and they feel comfortable there. These are people. At NoiseBridge, who are accepting of people for who they are, and not just accepting, but celebrating. You know, that's one of the things that I get from the hacker scene, despite all of the conflict. You know, you get one or more persons in a room, and there's going to be strife, but we can work stuff out, and it can be really beautiful.
So, on Mitch's fantastic note, does everyone want to close out with something that has been more positive in this group than it has been elsewhere as far as queer culture? And I really want to come back to another thing that Mitch has to say, but...
You can go on. I mean, we have 15 minutes left, and I would have some music. I feel like this comes to an end slowly, but if any of you have a desire to go on with something, then please do. For me, it's like nearly everything is said. I would not even know what further to ask, so kind of would really open the panel now.
Jeez, yeah, I just want to say that it's great to be queer, and that's what I'm expressing all the time, because let's celebrate. That's what Mitch says. I think you have to celebrate life, whatever way you get it, and well, let's do that. I mean, it's... we're talking like we're like some really oppressed men. And I must honestly say, I never had the physical harassment or really ever. The only thing is that I had to experience is the, well, the casual use of the words describing my sexuality that are used in a hurtful way. But yeah, I don't know. I'm over that now, and I mean, it's me. Here I am. I mean, if people don't care about that, there's going to be people who stare at my hair, my dreads. Well, fuck them. I mean, it's my hair. So, yeah. And that would be my closing remark.
I'd like to say for anyone listening out there who's having a tough time that I know it's really cliche, but it gets better. And we all love you, and yes. We're laughing, but it is, you know, there is a group of people, there is your family, and they're out there. And if you have trouble, you're welcome to contact me personally. My name is Fabienne. I'm the first hit on Fabienne and Google, so you're welcome to contact me.
Wow!
So you're welcome to contact me personally, wow. And and pretty much any other search engine. But you're welcome to contact me, and if you need someone to talk to you, then I would like to talk to you because it's not the end. So definitely talk, definitely be open, and if you haven't found your family, we're out here and we're ready to talk to you and help you and embrace you and love you and hug you and bring you into our family. So don't be upset. Be happy.
Yeah, absolutely. To reinforce the it gets better message. I mean, I in high school I was super depressed, like really depressed and suicidal. I actually attempted in high school, and you know, it was just because of a lot of things that were going on, and you know, I didn't know who I was, what was going on with like me physically, like who I was attracted to. I didn't understand any of these things. There was problems with my family and all this kind of stuff, but like it really, really, really gets way fucking better. I mean, this has been, I've been here, what, 4 days now, between setting up and doing this stuff. And this has been one of the most amazing fucking weeks of my life. And, every week is one of the most amazing fucking weeks of my life doing what I do. And it keeps going and keeps getting better. And yeah, exactly. Like just find where you're comfortable, find where your family is. And for me, it's been here. And that's because I haven't felt ostracized. I felt like there are other people like me in numbers that I can see. I can actually, we sit at a table with 10 people and there are more than one gay person. More than one gay person is at the table, usually. More than one vegetarian is at the table. You know, it's just
more than one hardware hacker's at the table.
Yeah, nowadays. and I guess in Germany now, more than one American is at the table. It's kind of funny, yeah. But yeah, it's visible for me, which is significant, and it allows me to, I don't know, just feel much more at home and everything. But yeah, I'm Jimmy Rogers. Unfortunately, I share the same name as the father of country music, so I am not the first hit on Google.
Jimmy P. Rogers.
Yeah, Jimmy P. Rogers. If you put up Jimmy Rogers and anything with electronics, like LED, like you're going to find me, but any of my projects. But yeah, absolutely contact me. But yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I said earlier, the first half of my life was just total depression. Hardly any experiences whatsoever that felt anything but depression for me. You know, being beaten up for being queer, for being an introverted geek, for being intellectual and weird in so many ways. And, you know, now I live a life that I totally love. You know, I love the life I live. I love being who I am. And if I can do that, fuck, anybody can. You know, like I just did not want to exist for the first half of my life. And just by making choices for myself, learning from the consequences of those choices and then making new choices that I thought might work. And it takes a lot of practice. It doesn't happen quickly. But by making choices for oneself and, you know, learning from the consequences and making new choices, one choice leads to another and to another, and life becomes so much better over time. Every year of my life is better than the year before by far. And I didn't set out to become some internet famous weird haired geek. That's just who I am. You know, I could choose to shave my head, my hair off, and sometimes I have. You know, it's not about the hair. It's just about me being me, expressing myself of whatever way I feel. And, you know, and not only am I not ostracized for that in the community that I surround myself with, but I'm respected for it. And, you know, and in return, I support other people in being who they are. It's really amazing when you find your tribe, whatever you call it, people you relate to, the culture you relate to, and then you can start creating more of it, giving back by, helping other people, which feels amazingly awesome, which makes me feel better. And then again, by doing, when I feel better, I can help other people around me. So, yeah, I mean, it's amazing where one can go from an incredibly horrible beginning, not wanting to exist, to, wherever it might lead that feels wonderful. And that's going to be different for every individual. But I encourage everyone to, you know, find your own path, make your own choices. It's not easy. It's really incredibly scary. And sometimes it's full of a lot of pain, but, it's so rewarding to make your own choices for yourself and see where that leads and learn and make new choices as a result. And I am the only Mitch Altman that shows up on the zillion first pages of Google when you put that in. And, really, anyone can contact me for any reason, anytime. I always answer my email, if not in a timely way, because I get hundreds a day. But I love talking to people about life, the universe, anything, and also quitting your job if you don't like it.
My name is Martin Haas, and I'm another one among the first hits on your favorite search engine. So it's easy to contact me too.
Only if you write it with two A's, yeah, because I failed.
Yeah. Well, yes, you have to know how to write it. Yes. Yeah. That's a problem. But anyway, I think Mitch mentioned a celebration, and that we should celebrate our culture and our hacking culture, the culture of hackers, and which is queer. So, there's a link between it, and this camp is about celebrating queer hacker culture. So, yeah, we can go outside and celebrate.
It finally stopped raining, so I mean it's
what stopped raining.
What a wonderful sign. We have people even listening outside with deck telephone. That's great.
But that shows that it's not raining because
actually I think he was there during the rain as well.
Wow. My last comment, or do you want to my last comment is that I, as much as I love rainbow flags, it's great to wave whatever flag you represent, and you can be under however many number of flags you believe in. It's when you let those flags become a box that you fit into that you become nothing besides that. And so deciding what you stand for is different than deciding what you are. And so you can be queer and be a hacker and be whatever else you want to be, but be who you are, be true to it, and that's what matters. Everything else will be fine, or fuck it. Like,
okay, tomato. I mean,
well, let's celebrate it, life itself, and have fun in your life. And it doesn't matter if you're queer or not; just be a human being.
Thank you all deeply for this beautiful panel we had here, and I hope it helped and maybe changed something for some people. And my personal closing remarks I want to give to some pieces of music, because these were my guards and guidance in those troubleful days.